social learning? Well, there's just four examples there from the very extensive literature. You can read through them, but very broadly, what it tends to denote is a collective interaction and learning process that leads to some kind of concerted action, which in turn has feedback on the social and the environmental context. So it's a process, it's generally seen as an ongoing process for facilitating and generating behavioural change. So if I can represent that diagram to be, if this learning process here in the middle, the value of learning, interaction, participation, actions and activities that lead to, that take place within a wider social and physical context, that leads to concerted action and social outcomes. So why is this relevant to the context of mental management? And it's largely because the global discourse on environmental development has created these participatory, decentralised management institutions that create a space for learning and collective interaction. And if we think back to the study of principles on the next slide, which I'm sure I'll need to tell everyone here what they are, but I've summarised them there, then they've created these multi-stakeholder participatory institutions, platforms, and whatever you want to call them, that promote both vertical and horizontal integration in terms of water management. And so these have created a series of spaces in South Africa, and maybe particularly because of their national water rights that were implemented over the last half of the year in Finland. So again, diagrammatic here of what a global discourse that's driven national water policy and legislative changes, which has created these spaces for the interaction and participation of different water users. In theory, at least, it's supposed to lead to more optimal resource management. And so the two case studies, which I was based my research on, are the Captain Water Use Association in the Eastern Cape of South Africa and the Peace Development Management Committee of the Central Western Namibia. And these both institutions are both informed in the wake of the national interest in respective countries. So just quickly to give you an overview of those countries' national effects and the relevant points anyway. They both brought water back under state ownership, so water to keep people from landlords and our hair of climate change. Both of them adopted this YouTube care towards natural environment and the Namibian national water stop short of mandating the environmental rights of water, which the South African government incorporated for the thing that people are committed. Both of them saw the vehicle for participation in more equitable water management and through decentralised management institutions and their basic management committee for Namibia and special management agencies in the association. And in order to address the imbalance of the previous apartheid regime, these must have perfect community racial and gender representation. Recognising that water is an economic good, both cost recovery, the water services, all areas we are just today, South Africa, also health is 25 litres free versus physical, which is in the human right. In terms of water allocation, both acts promote allocation to efficient water users at the same time, and again to address the imbalance of the past, they accord priority to historically disadvantaged individuals. Recognise that water is a finite resource, therefore there's been an attempt to invoke the need to pay a full score. So you do have to have a permit to discharge water to the land. In theory, you can be fined if you do that without permission. So, if we have a look at the, I'm going to tell you a bit about the catchment for which both institutions have jurisdiction. And if we look at the Peace and Faith Management Committee, their area of jurisdiction is an ephemeral river which originates in the mountains. From the photo, people get the right amount in the background, but all the rainfall that goes along there when it does flow, then falls in those mountains. And once you reach the halfway point of the catchment, it's into a zero rainfall belt. So in the open catchment, there's commercial stock farming by farmers of European descent. Whatever water is falling as rain that doesn't get trapped in their dams flow through the middle section of the catchment, which is that's the second photo down, and that's very sparsely populated and surrounded by vegetation. So the main water user there is game, the national park, and riparian vegetation. Where you can see on the map, Gombe, the research station, owned by quite a powerful NGO in Namibia. And they draw water from a borehole. Most years, water will flow past the research station, but not every year. It doesn't always reach there. And it certainly, water rarely reaches the sea. And that's how it flowed into the sea was in 1963. So any water that isn't held in the dams doesn't evaporate, which is extremely high, sinks into an alluvial aquifer in the lower freezer, which is the main reason that water in Spain can exist. It's supplied by water from that aquifer, which is pumped out by the National River Foundation. So how did the Precept Basin Management Committee actually come about? And its background is in an EU-funded action learning project, which when the Water Act, when the new legislation came in and the project was due to end, the Department of Water Affairs took that multi-stakeholder platform and continued it as a Basin Management Committee. So the key issues in the area of a lack of information sharing, particularly between government agencies and institutions and the general public. And there were some concerns, certainly from the NGO and from this, I forgot to mention, there's one other stakeholder in the lower catchment, and that's some isolated settlements of top-line communities, which kind of send boy sound people, and they have very some fiscal-based livelihoods, and they dig and dug wells into the river, and their issues are that the over extraction from the lower areas is lowering groundwater, and they're no longer able to rely on hand over wells. Desertification has been observed by the NGO, they are also concerned that due to possibly due to climate change and also due to over extraction. Another particular issue was that all the stakeholders downstream were thinking that it's the commercial farms that were withholding too much water in the dams, which is why they're no longer getting the water. So there's a lot of mistrust between stakeholders, and there was no real forum for everybody to all come together with the catchment level. So that's what was happening. And then the Catchment Water User Association has quite a different history for a different context as well. It's a perennial river located in the Eastern Cape of South Africa. It does have relatively high rainfall for South Africa because it's on the it gets both the summer and the winter rain right on the margin of two Cape areas. The key thing about the catchment is that under the apartheid government, the upper half of the catchment fell into the former Sikasai homeland. So there's a long history of forced migration, land dispossession, and a lot of ethnic tension between the different ethnic groups, and that's Xhosa speaking people, coloured Cape Verdeans, and white farmers. And so in the lower half of the catchment was developed as a key commercial citrus growing area, while the area that was located in the sky was successful livelihoods. What's interesting is you can see on there's a dam, and the photo shows the dam there, and that's located by seawall, which was in the form of the sky, but only commercial citrus farmers in the lower catchment had access to that water, and were entitled to right to use the water from that dam. obviously in the new administration going to carry on, and so the legislation, if you remember, I didn't know it, the legislation said that any old irrigation board who formerly managed water resources in that way had to transform into water user associations and also become more representative of water users within the catchment and start sharing water more equitably. At the same time, in the late 1990s, several capacity building research projects were being implemented by Rhodes University in South Africa in the form of sky areas in terms of environmental education. So they were approached by the irrigation board, the commercial farmers on the irrigation board, and asked if they could help with the transformation process, so drawing on their existing networks. They help the irrigation board transform into what it was supposed to be under the new legislation. So the key issues were now a whole new demand on water resources from people who previously weren't entitled, also the environmental requirement from the legislation that required an allocation from that dam, and there's one other stakeholder which is really important, and that is in the lower area, some commercial citrus farmers, because they have riparian rights, didn't subscribe to the scheme for access to that dam. They didn't want to pay for that water because they could simply buy riverfront land and just extract water directly. So they also now want water entitlement. So it's all quite complicated. And the mandate of the Water User Association was to come up with some scenarios for water allocation for the future, which could be implemented. And so if we go back to my original diagram, and I was looking at what kinds of concerted action and what kind of social actors were coming out of these processes in those two contexts. But based on my own observations and interviews with each member of both those institutions, there was generally a lack of action going out of those. Although people did strongly identify changes in the social dynamics, people are much more positive towards the other stakeholders, they're much more respectful, but there was a lack of actual practical action and outcome behavioural change. And the main, a very fundamental problem was that the institutions had no independent funding or no mechanism for achieving that under the legislation. Both were reliant on overseas development funding or research funding. So once that had been withdrawn, they were really struggling to survive. Another key problem with the power relations of politics, in that all the agendas and suggestions for action must be approved anyway by Department of Water Affairs, or by the main Department of Water Affairs in Namibia, which was a very lengthy process. As part of the research project in the Cat River, resource availability and the ecological reserve figures were calculated, and these were submitted to Department of Water Affairs approval in 2006. As far as I know, there's been contact recently with approval in South Africa, and they're still waiting for approval on those figures. And until then, nobody can really begin to start talking about allocations until they know what they've actually got to allocate. It's also a very bureaucratic process for legal representation, or legal recognition, sorry, the statutory body. There's a whole set of guidelines surrounding constitution, annual reports, strategic plans, business plans, and I printed them off the internet. And it's a pile of papers that are filled with jargon, and at the same time as the legislation wants to make the process more representative and participatory, that's obviously going to preclude quite a lot of people from participating in the process and require skills and resources in order to fill up those facilities. In the Cat River, there was definitely evidence that powerful stakeholders were using stalling tactics to delay this process? Any scenarios that would put forward and sort of question science in a way that is to do with the way science became such a big aspect of the process? The models and the figures, they would always say, well, we haven't seen that and we don't think that the figures are correct, we're not a consultant to confirm that. And so it was in their interest to delay the process from generating the change. There was also intergovernmental department politics. In the past, water infrastructure has been managed by the Department of Agriculture, the Ministry of Agriculture, and obviously to the benefit of certain groups, population groups. Now a lot of that power has been transferred to the Department of Water Affairs, who are starting to sort of limit the limits of water resources, so they're starting to limit dam building. So the Ministry of Agriculture was holding workshops in this area and deliberately misinforming emerging farmers about how you could build as many dams as you want. The Department of Water Affairs can't do anything about it, they won't put a lot of dam. Two different departments giving two very different messages. I suppose coming through from the discourse of environmental development, the legislative mandates are almost contradictory in some cases. For example, we'll try to promote allocation to efficient water users and at the same time equitable allocation. Commercial farmers, for example, use drip irrigation techniques which are highly efficient in terms of water use, but giving them more water is certainly not meeting equity objectives. And finally, the whole history of, in both catchments, of disempowerment of various social groups has affected both the willingness and ability to participate and act in such institutions. And so the implications for that were a multi-stakeholder participation, and therefore social learning by the relevant actors has been difficult to operationalise. Social learning crisis has not yet led to action and tangible outcomes, although there is still potential for that to happen in the future, just obviously just a snapshot in time. But I would say that's largely due to a lack of corresponding institutional empowerment. However, these crises have led to improved stakeholder relations, which, given the history of the both contexts, that's a fairly important objective. But it has meant that to date there has been a perpetuation of the status quo in terms of access to water resources, which is the, in terms of livelihoods, it helps to maintain that socioeconomic differential. That's my position.